Welcome to another episode of the Evolution Exchange podcast. Today is a very exciting episode at the Volvo office. So I'm joined here with four different managers at Volvo, and we're here to talk about leadership and the different fun things it involves. As usual, we'll start off with a round of introductions. Werner, would you like to introduce yourself first?
Yeah, so my name is Werner. I am an engineering manager within Fulfillment. My team primarily deal with lead times and stock cars. I've been with Volvo now for about a year and a half. And I think Jemma is a dog person, but I'm a cat person. We have got three cats at home that tend to join in meetings as well. So yeah, that's about that.
Hi, my name is Shubhra. I'm an engineering lead here in VolvoCars.com. Been in here for about 17 months. My cluster predominantly works with how we get closer to the customer in terms of generating invoices for them when we sell cars and so on. And yeah, basically the whole omnichannel experience. I am not a pet person, so neither dogs nor cats, but I like cars. So that's why I work here in Volvo Cars. And yeah, like to travel around with my family and friends. So yeah, that's a little bit about me.
Nice. Okay, and my name is Camilla, and I am in a cluster called Adults, which sits within a product area within Volvo Cars called Learning Shop. So essentially, my teams, we focus on providing the ability for the customers to buy products from the Volvo Cars app. But our intention is also to go omnichannel and allow the experience to sit on all channels, for example, the web, the app, and the in-car app. Will also be yet another channel, essentially enabling wider range of services that we can provide to the users, be it software upgrades to their cars or any other services, accessories, including many kinds of accessories as well. So it's fun. But otherwise, I'm an engineer at heart. So it's a lot of learning every day at home and at work. I have two kids, you know, that's on its own. It's a full-time job as well, so fun all around. Yeah.
And hello, my name is Rui. I'm also an engineering manager in the assistant support product area. So my team is responsible for building a framework for retailers to use primarily, but it's going to be a centralized platform for the vision is to be used all across the non-customer facing solutions at Volvo Cars. I joined Volvo Cars 6 months ago, so still learning a lot on the organizational level. I have a six-month-old son, so definitely I go home and the new shift starts as well. Exactly. A lot of fun, but a lot of challenges as well. I like to photograph. I like to play music. And if I had to pick between cats and dogs, I would probably pick cats also. So, yeah.
Oh, I'm outnumbered. I love my dogs. But I'm perfect. Thank you for those introductions.
Hi, everyone. This is Chris Bennett here, the Nordics Managing Director here at Evolution. We're committed to doing recruitment in a different way that adds value to both our clients and candidates by providing you with amazing speakers and leading-edge discussions on what's going on in the tech scene at the moment. There are three reasons why you should contact me. If you would like to speak on a future podcast, if you are interested in hiring awesome tech, data, product or gaming freelancers for your business, or if you are looking for an exciting new organization to work with, please get in touch. Thank you so much for listening, and I really hope to hear from you soon. Please enjoy the rest of the podcast.
So for this podcast, I have prepared some questions that I will ask, and we'll go around the room, get everyone's opinions, see how your different teams do things differently, but also the lessons and the experience you've had before Volvo, how that has allowed you all to excel here at Volvo too. Just to start off with a question, actually, that isn't on the prepared sheet, so I do apologise for this. But what attracted you to come and work here?
I can take a shot at that. So I was working in a company that product-wise was not as motivating for what I wanted to do. And I had the impression that Volvo Cars was reinventing itself a lot and had a clear vision, had an attractive product. And I I know some people who were working in Volvo Cars before, and they were really enjoying it as well. So mainly it was the product side of things. I mean, I also like cars, and I also like the combined vision at Volvo Cars and how they've been transforming their cars and where they were before and where they are now. It's been a huge change, and that also got me pretty interested.
Yeah, and I think you and I, we are very different in the, you know, the amount of time that we spend in the company. So the reason that I joined Volvo about 5.5 years ago was, I think for me, it was mostly that I knew nothing about Volvo as a company, and being a software engineer and then imagining myself working in a car company was interesting thought. And I'm like, what is it that I could do? But at the time, when I joined as a front-end engineer, as a full-stack engineer, actually. But then my passion always was with Android development, and I had done that before, and I wanted to get back to it. So, and I knew that Volvo was going to build an app team soon enough after I joined. So I joined Volvo with already agreeing, during the interview process, that I would be part of the app team, which then later happened. And I think I learned a lot of things around how Volvo is as a company, but also the industry of automotive industry and how big of a competition there is. It's so interesting with all those challenges. So I think for me, it was the land of unknown, but a lot to explore.
Yeah, I can give it a shot. For me, I think, as I said before, I'm quite a big fan of cars. So that's one reason why I'm here. I'll be very honest, the second reason why I'm here is I really love where the office is located, and we just talked about it during lunch.
Priority.
That doesn't matter.
Priority.
So that's for sure. But on the other hand, I think it's also, I've been hearing a lot. So I have had experience working with the aerospace industry before. And when I look at the automotive side of the world, I see aerospace and automotive sort of very close to each other in terms of ways of working and, you know, the whole setup and so on, with the connection towards manufacturing and the factories and stuff like that. That fascinates me a lot. So that is one reason why I'm here for sure. And I've been following it quite closely in LinkedIn and the media and the news and so on. And I've been hearing a lot about quite a few transformations that Volvo Cars is quite brave enough and ambitious to go forward. And one of the things that we are currently doing is moving from our the whole wholesale model to direct online business. And that's something which was extremely fascinating for me. I know some of our competitors have been on this race before, but I was quite keen to be a part of this journey to see how Volvo Cars follows it through as well. So that was that. These are some things. It's pretty exciting.
Yes, I joined also a little bit of a petrolhead as well. And Volvo has always been kind of an attractive employer for me. So I like the brand. We had an experience with Volvo safety with my daughter. And it was a situation of it just became a brand I put a lot of trust in. And when the opportunity arose, then it was very attractive to come here as well. And leading the transformation in our sector was also one of those things that seemed like a very interesting challenge, and not necessarily an easy one, but something that we could really achieve as well. And bringing that transformation in would lead to a lot of value. And that transformation in itself was part of why I joined as well, because it is such a huge challenge still, and there's still a lot to discover and do there. So yeah, I think those are the primary reasons why I joined.
Amazing. Perfect. It gives a good bit of context to all of you. And yeah, you all lead teams here as well, which is really impressive as well. What are some of the key leadership lessons that you have learned over the years that have allowed you to become good leaders? Debra, do you want to start?
Yes, I think I strongly believe in one of the leadership principles that Volvo Cars is also quite passionate about, is to keep your people in the front, and people are the reason why we are here and what we do. So that's something which I strongly believe in. So we are sort of focusing to see how we could build a strong in-house team within Volvo Cars. We have been, of course, working a lot in-house as well as with our partners and suppliers and so on. But one of our ambitions is to also get key talent within the company. So that is something which I'm quite passionate about, and one of our focus areas, or strategic focus areas, this year and the next years to come as well. So,
Perfect. How about yourself?
I think that one of the main things that I've learned, especially as a newcomer, is how important, as cliche as it might sound, but how important building trust is initially. Because you tend to want to change things quick, right? Once you join, you bring in your ideas, your processes, and you realize that actually building trust in the team initially is more important than trying to change things too quick. Things can be changed over time slowly. I think Volvo definitely presents an environment in which that can be implemented. But I think one of the main things has definitely been trust, accountability, making sure that the team is not too comfortable and not too much under pressure. It's really hard to actually find the right sweet spot there. I'm still figuring that out myself. It's a continuous process. Taking responsibility for whatever hits the team primarily. The team is there, and I at least see myself as the shield for whatever issues that might arise. That should go without saying, but I think it's really important to also mention it. Yeah, a few things.
For me, like Rui said as well, it's like building trust is sometimes, I think, underrated as well. And 100%. I cannot remember where I read it, but there was something that referred to a 100-day rule that within mm-hmm. the first 100 days, you don't do drastic changes. You first build up that trust, and then only once that trust is built, you kind of start changing things slowly as well. And I think especially in Volvo, where things have been the same for a long period of time, that is one of the key things that you need to remember here, is like drastic changes aren't always well received as well. So I think that's definitely one of the things that I've taken to heart and that has helped me, is like, just assess things that first 100 days, both for you to understand kind of the problem space and also just for the team to get to know you and be involved in those 100 days, not necessarily looking for what you need to change, but looking for ways you can help them out to kind of just embed yourself a little bit better as well. And every time I've done that as well, it's yielded results, because it's a situation of, yes, you're now becoming part of the team first before you change things. Then they're much better received.
Can I follow that up with one thing? Because probably all of us heard stories, just like I heard in the previous organization I worked for, where I've heard stories from my direct reports where they were saying that some previous manager jumped in and they wanted to change things in the first week, like drastically change methodology or stuff like that. And the result is, it's never productive. There was tension from the get-go. And so those were also, learning from that kind of feedback is, that's another thing that I encourage a lot, is continuous feedback.
But that's also the thing, right? It's like, I think why we're saying that like 100 days, 100 days like equals like, what, 3 months, right?
4, yeah.
So that gives you time, because normally you're starting out somewhere new, and let's be quite frank and honest, you don't know if you're going to be there at the end of those 3 months as well. So it is your responsibility to your team then as well to kind of keep things stable, because the more stable you can keep the team, the more it performs. So jumping in and day one changing things never ends well. It adds more friction for you, and it adds more friction for the team. So it's like there's not a reason to jump in and just start drastically changing things. Plus, then you're definitely two things: you're quick and you're wrong. unless there's some superhuman way that somebody assesses things within 24 hours that I haven't ever seen, but normally it's like doing things like that: like you're quick and you're wrong. That's
yeah, I think there's even a name for that, right? The 100 days. I heard it as 3 months as well, and it's look, listen, and learn, where you literally mm-hmm. observe, you listen to people to learn and understand. And I've been in this company for a while, but every time that I go from one part of it to the another, I have to do that over again, because mm-hmm. it's a big company. There is different ways of working in every part of it. So you have to get to know people. You have to understand what the actual challenges, issues are around each part of the organization. But in my experience and in recent years here, I think one leadership lesson that I can exactly remember, like yesterday, it happened, I think, around a year ago, exactly, if you all remember, in February, earthquake hit Turkey, and it was devastating, tens of thousands lives lost. I was sitting by my desk, and I'm Turkish by origin, so I was sitting by my desk, and those were the days that I would, you know, barely carry myself to work and then go home because of all the news that I was listening to and everything. And I remember that my manager at the time, so they came by my desk for something different, not like to ask a question. And I remember it naturally so happened that we also mentioned the earthquake itself. So I remember this person, I knew probably there was something that they needed to attend, but they, you know, they took time, they sat down next to me, and they just asked a couple of questions, knowing that I was ready to share, like, because you know that, like, once you build the trust, once you know the person a little bit. I think that's the one of the most important lessons for leadership that I have seen shown to me by literally and exemplified by my manager at the time. So we cried together, and this was right up open in the office, in the middle of the office, and no one cared between neither that person nor me, like that there were people around me, but around us. We just were very, very in this moment sharing a moment where we were like very sad about a devastating thing hitting a nation. And then after that, I think what it brought to our relationship is that we had tough discussions afterwards. We had productive discussions, but quite oftentimes we wouldn't. It's not like I didn't agree with the person every time, but I had tremendous respect to the person. I knew that when they disagree, they do it, but they still have the best of intentions at heart. I know that they keep looking out for the best for me as well, in my growth, in my future, in the company and everything. So empathy, I think, is very, very important as part of leadership. Yeah. Picking up on the clues.
Yeah, that's definitely a good story. I had a similar story with this, one of my direct reports at the time, who was underperforming. Mm-hmm. And that was noticeable in the day-to-day work. At one point, I was checking in with him if everything was okay. And I give him a little nudge that whatever task he was working on was, slightly going not according to plan, I would say. And that was one of those occasions where this person happened to open up. And from there, he was having personal issues. Right. And that was the reason, basically, why. So I was very, on one hand, I was happy that I was, that I took the approach of asking, I mean, what was going on, instead of being too focused on just the output and to actually understand the circumstances. And again, different conversation, because it's hard to open up about personal issues.
Definitely.
But things completely shift afterwards.
Yeah.
It shifts. In my experience, pretty much all the time.
Yeah.
But this is something that I found both here and at previous junctions. This is the one thing that I found you need to be ready to do as a manager is to give a lot of yourself first to build that trust. So to be open, to be vulnerable first.
Yeah. Leading by example.
Yeah. And then after that, kind of people start opening up. But that's, I think, the difficult part of being a leader is showing that vulnerability. A lot of times I think people look at leaders and say, yeah, they're a strong leader. So they you don't necessarily want them to show that weakness, but especially in teams, right? Teams, there's a fine balance between the two where you have to show some kind of vulnerability as well, because you can't just be this, I almost want to see you like this omnipotent person looking down. You don't want to be that person, and it never ends well in that sense as well, because then they don't trust you because
it's not real.
Yeah. For me, the hallmark of a good team and a good team is a team that's able to sit at a whiteboard, fight with each other, basically almost kill each other, walk out the room and go for lunch like nothing ever happened.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And then those are constructive things. And that is normally when you know when the team is healthy and the leadership in the team is healthy, if they feel open to do that with you as a manager there.
Yeah,
because otherwise, if there's just silence, there's no opinions, then there's something wrong.
When I first started out as a manager, I had this idea that to be concrete, that if you're having a bad day, do you tell your team, your direct reports? My initial perception was no way, right?
Yeah.
Because you'll come out as weak.
Yes.
Or, you know, and people look up to you, so you have to give the example. And then I started talking with more experienced managers, and and it was really interesting, the kind of response that started. And they were like, absolutely. Wait, what do you mean? I mean, how does that work? It's a lot about how you say things.
Yes.
Because even you might be having a terrible day and you can say it in a constructive way, because that's that also sets the example.
Yeah.
So that was a huge lesson for me a few years ago.
He's like, yes, I'm having a bad day, but I'm coping with it. That type of thing is what you need to
do. That's completely different from saying, yeah, my day is being terrible, don't talk to me.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah,
it's,
exactly.
It's the energy that it's you convey when you...
You know what? I'm not having a great day, but you know, we're doing stand-up now, and from here on, it just gets better. That type of small little things like that.
Small little things, yeah.
You can still communicate the same thing, but in a positive manner.
Exactly.
And that has a good effect.
Yeah.
I think what was really interesting, I read something actually quite similar to what you just said then about if people don't say anything and you sit in a room and no one's answering to you. And I was listening to a podcast on leadership, and it was like people are still thinking when they might not be saying anything out loud, but they're still having internal thoughts. There's something going on in their brain. And I actually started to do it on our stand-ups, where I'd be like, I know that something's in your brain, so just let me know, like, let me know what it is. Like, is it good? Is it bad? Like, happy to have that opinion. Because I think sometimes if people keep it in their heads, it becomes such a bigger problem. And having that trust and transparency, it sounds like you're all really open to something there, which is good.
Yeah.
I think in our case, I just want to mention, it's a bit evolving, so to speak, because in our, it's still a very small team or a group within Stockholm that exists. And predominantly the stakeholders are still in Gothenburg and other parts of the world. So it takes a while to sort of build that whole trust and connection. And whenever we sort of onboard people, they kind of wonder that, how will this work? Because we are like 5% of the team based out of here and the rest in Gothenburg.
Yeah.
Is this just a matter of time? And are we off for a long game here in Stockholm? So on and so forth. So it's also about, I think, empowering the people and letting them know that we are here indeed for a long game and not really kind of a short-term goal. But we try to empower people that whenever they feel they want to get engaged with the stakeholders and so on, they can just feel free to travel. Or in fact, historically, we have been doing a lot of these bigger ceremonies like quarterly planning and so on, predominantly in Gothenburg. And then people were questioning, couldn't we do it sometimes here as well and so on. So now we have started rotating that culture that, okay, you know, let's do it once there and once here and so on. So people don't really feel that, okay, we are sort of a minority community here and it's all sort of a company based in Gothenburg. So it's also empowerment, I think. It's a lot to do with how you want to drive the show.
Gives people meaning.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Gives them responsibility. Gives them, I would argue, it gives them a little bit of a healthy amount of pressure, which I think is really important. You don't grow without pressure or without adversity. Too much of it is obviously not going to be productive. But there, again, that fine balance is, I think, paramount. Yeah.
It leads on quite nicely to one of our questions that I prepared, which is about collaboration and communication challenges that you face. So with having, you know, half a team in Gothenburg, half a team in Stockholm, people remote, how do you guys face that challenge? Well, I know you've got a lot of your team in Gothenburg.
I think it becomes a slightly tricky when, let's say, 15 people are sitting in a big conference room in Gothenburg and 2 people are sitting on Teams and just trying to make their voice heard. That has been a bit of a challenge historically, but as I said, what we have been trying to bridge that gap now, or it has never really been a gap, but sometimes people feel that they are not able to be vocal enough in some of their placing their opinions and so on. So we're trying to see how to make the collaboration stronger, and I would say it's working quite well. It's location doesn't seem to be a constraint really, that, you know, people don't feel a part of the team. It's just that the trust takes a while when you're not sitting every day together and working together, but it has been reasonably well, I would say, for me so far. But
and how do you make sure you're there for people in like Rui was saying, there's vulnerable moments of when things aren't going too well or there's something personally happening? How do you make sure you're there for them as a manager when you are in a different location?
Remotely, this is a challenge. And this is also why it's so important, at least for me, to try and get everybody to put on their camera. Because the visual cues that you pick up, you might not hear it, they might not say it, but you can see if somebody's having a rough time. And at that point in time, you can interject.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas if you don't have that visual cue, especially with people that are remote, it's like you just don't know until that point that they reach out. And then, to be honest, it's like at that point in time, there's not much you could do. Whereas if you've caught this 3 or 4 or maybe even a week earlier, there's much more that you could have done. So for me, that's the one thing that was a pain point when I started asking people to put on the camera. But now everybody does it. And it's also just that consistency. Like every morning, doesn't matter how you look or what you do, you switch your camera on, and then everybody, and peer pressure does kick in at some point.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it's like, and just if you have people remote, just seeing them has so much positives for you as a manager. It makes the world of difference.
I mean, again, small things, right? Changing small things. Yeah. And those small things you can change pretty much in the beginning. And I mean, if we were just to compare the amount of information that the 6 of us here are exchanging because we are here in person compared to being on a camera, even if the video is turned on, it's a world of a difference. Yes. If the video is not turned on, and I've heard horror stories from, you know, other organizations. In my previous organization, I had a team member who joined my team. He was working on another team with like 20 people. And when he started working, we had that culture of you know, encouraging people to, you know, show their face, turn on their camera. And we had a one-on-one, and he told me, I mean, your whole team shows their face in the rituals. And I was thinking, well, is that unusual? Because in my previous team, we were 20 and nobody showed their face in refinements, in anything like that.
Yeah.
So people do feel the difference.
It speaks a lot about the cultures also.
I think.
I went through a similar thing as well, I think, in our team as well, when this was at the beginning of pandemic, when I was, you know, transitioning from an engineer into an engineering manager role. We did have a few cameras on the meeting. And I think it so very much changed the fabric of the team, where we actually committed to showing the faces, and things went much smoother from there on. We all are based in Stockholm, but that was pandemic time, so no one would come to office. But one little aspect changed a lot.
And back then, people were not used to have their faces on camera all the time. Like today, things changed quite a bit in the last like 3 years, right?
That's true.
But that being said as well, as you start noticing what meetings you can have on camera and which ones you can't.
Yeah.
I mean, certain things like
one-on-ones, I mean.
Yeah, one-on-ones, well, I have to have them. I have them because my teams are in Gothenburg. But one-on-ones are in general fine. But when you've got big collaborations and so, and you're working on problems, like, I don't care what anybody says, I have not found a replacement for a proper whiteboard and everybody in one room.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the thing. It's like, there are some of these meetings, no matter how much you try, having them in person, it just is so much more worth it. It's worth the trip down to Gothenburg to go sit there, or bringing them up. I mean, you know which ones are then useful online and which ones aren't.
Yeah, 100%.
So, Brian, I know that's something that we were talking about over lunch, about the different types of meetings. Do you want to raise that to the group?
Yeah, meetings have been an interesting topic in our area for a long time now.
Oh, do you have meetings?
Yeah, we do. But yeah.
Only 3 years. Yeah. 3 weeks, right? 3 weeks.
Just 8 in a day.
Okay.
But yeah, to be honest, we have been questioning the value of a lot of meetings of late, and we are trying to get away from it as much as possible. We have been trying to work async, or let's see what is the importance of having a meeting, or what is the value that it delivers at the end of it. And a lot of what we have started off so far now is to try to working async, or let's open up a collaborative document and let's comment and feedback and so on, if it's a specific agenda that we are going to talk about it. And if you still feel that we are not able to solve it async, then let's get into a discussion. Doesn't really have to be a placeholder on the calendar necessarily, because that's something which we have heard a lot in our client surveys and so on as well, and from people that, okay, we really need to do something about reducing the number of meetings that we have in the company. And I know a lot of organizations are probably a little ahead in the game in terms of publishing guidelines on when to have meetings, or kind of document the outcomes and value and so on and questioning or challenging it itself. But we also have an ambition to have some meeting-free days. I know it's practically nice to say, but next to impossible to achieve. That's our long-term ambition as well.
But this is also being encouraged from higher up leadership as well in the company. When I've heard a lot of communication or seen communication being shared towards us, you know, making sure that we do go to the meetings where we absolutely believe that our input is valuable, as well as we will get the knowledge that we need. And then otherwise, we can definitely skip the meetings. So it's a wider problem than just, I think, to your cluster.
Sure.
It's that, I think, golden rule that it's much harder to implement than to just mention, which is if you feel you have nothing to contribute or not no input to be gained, because you can still not contribute and learn something from the meeting, right? But a lot of the times, I've been implementing that myself, a lot of the times I have meetings where I think I really don't have a ball in that game right there. So just don't join. And that's something that I also continuously encourage my team to do.
Yes, I think that's where the key comes in, right? It's like, if you do not have a horse in the race, you stay out, and but make sure your team doesn't join as well. Because what has happened previously with us is I wouldn't join a meeting, but a team member would join the meeting, which then automatically includes them the next time as well. And they waste a lot of time in there. And I think that is something that you need to make sure that you communicate as well to your team. It's like, if there's not a positive for you, then remove it. And it's difficult here, right?
Yeah.
Because calendars are closed with office. But ask in the mornings, do you guys have any meetings?
Yeah.
And if you hear something like, I have this meeting where we're going to be testing this and this, it's like, well, look, is that really, are we involved there? Can they just ping you if they have a problem? Yeah. Do you need to be in that 3-hour long testing session? Because you're not going to enjoy it and you're not going to get value out of it. And it takes away from your focus time.
Could it be, and this is something that I don't think it's mentioned often, could it be because in some occasions, meetings give you this illusion of productivity? Because you have that slot in your calendar, you're going to go there, even if you don't open your mouth, it's like 1 hour that you spend in that one meeting. Although obviously in practice, the outcome is completely different.
Yes.
So, and that's something that I think is worth pushing back against.
But I think that's the thing, right? It's like, if you go back to how things were, people were in office. So if somebody was looking for somebody, they could see, they're busy, right?
Yeah.
So then it became a situation of when it became remote, then it was a situation of, I'm going to block time to do code. That way my calendar looks busy. Nobody's going to interrupt me.
So many times.
And then it gives you this false sense of, I'm busy because my calendar is full. And if there's a meeting, even though I don't go attend it, I'll leave it in there. I won't decline it, but I just won't attend it because then that slot is blocked. So then I'm busy at that time. And I think that's also, I mean, my meetings have been cut in half since I joined here, because do I need to be in here? Is there going to be value? Do you have any questions? No. Then I'm not going to attend this meeting because there's no value for you, me being there, and you're not in my problem area. So I'm not going to sit there and pretend that I know what your teams are doing. If you want to include me, fine, but then you have to spend time in briefing me beforehand, because I don't know what you then would want from me.
And in some cases, I could be quite interested on the outcome of the meeting, but I don't need to sit and spend the whole hour just listening to all the views and everything as well. So that's something we...
So it's more about async communication, I think, just following up afterwards and sharing the notes, as well as a good meeting agenda, obviously, also.
That's another thing that I noticed a lot in Volvo that I think where we definitely could improve is I've lost count how many times someone sets up a meeting called quick sync, no agenda.
Yes.
Nothing.
But it's quick.
It's quick. At least it's quick. Probably wrong as well. Wrong, right?
It's a quick 1 hour meeting. We're going to discuss something in an hour.
It's quick, at least that. But do you notice that as well? A lot of meetings with no agenda?
Yes, absolutely.
It happens all the time.
For me, the thing is, like, if there's a quick sync, you know what? Call me on Teams. Yeah. Call me on Slack. Yeah. We don't need to book a meeting for
this. Write a quick message.
Yeah, write a quick message.
It's also quick, but probably quicker.
Personally, for me, and we were just discussing about it during lunch as well, is that I think this is a flip side of the post-pandemic effect as well. Because earlier, when, like, for example, we're sitting here and doing this in person, I think this personally gives me a lot of energy, mm-hmm. and then it doesn't rain out, and you know, you keep talking. And but the same thing when it happens in Teams, it's so draining,
and you feel it, right? Yeah, exactly. People who phase out of meetings.
Meeting fatigue,
which goes back to this whole thing. I mean, it goes back to the camera being turned off, and you go like, I mean, Dad, I've seen them. I'm looking at that thumbnail for a half an hour. There's nothing, right?
Like talking to one.
Yeah. But that's the thing. It's like, you do get meeting fatigue on online meetings. I don't. Maybe it's just because, I mean, as managers, you do tend to be more of a people's person. Maybe it's just you do energy. You do kind of get energy when you have these things in person. But that's something I've also noticed. Like, if there's too many meetings, meeting fatigue is a real thing. It's like I can have the exact same amount of meetings in office and run from here to there. And by the end of the day, I'm ready for the next one. And then you sit a day in the same meetings, but you're remote. And it's like, by the end of the day, it's like, yeah, I'm glad this day is over. Let's not do that again, type of feeling.
Sure. Do you not find as well, back to the camera point of, if someone doesn't have their camera turned on, but you have your camera turned on, you do so many more like physical attributes because you can't see how they're reacting to what you're saying.
Yeah.
So I don't know about you, my brain goes overtime on, like, are they happy about me saying this? Are they sad? Like, are they shocked? And I'm trying to like overcompensate by doing more physical reactions myself.
Mine doesn't change. I'm always just verbose. So it's like,
I guess that depends on the people in the meeting, right? And I would say it depends. Yes. I mean, if you're in a meeting with your team that you had for a long time, people are comfortable with each other, it's like, I don't really care, to be honest, when it comes to. Because I tend to be also, you know, expressive. But if it's a new forum, if it's an important meeting, if there's a lot of people present, then then absolutely. Yeah.
Speaking of meetings and being effective, let's move on to the next.
Yeah, let's move on. Perfect. So some of our next questions are more focused on. We get a lot of questions to the podcast of how do you encourage people to go into leaders, and a lot of questions from junior leaders. So my first one is, how does the culture here at Volvo help young leaders progress?
Maybe I can take that or start at least, because I think I was one example going from an engineer to a leader's position of engineering manager. I think in my case, Volvo being such a big company and it having so very like such a variety of challenges, big ones, right? Then you want to, at one point when being an individual contributor, you understand that it's not only about coding, but you know, there is also other areas that you can contribute with, especially if you are lucky enough to have colleagues who encourage going further and pushing your boundaries and pushing yourself out of like your current comfort zone, which also was in a case with me, luckily. So sometimes it's other leaders inspiring you. Sometimes it's the fact that you understand that you have potential to contribute at larger scale. Sometimes it's actually the lack of leadership or the kind of leadership that you want to see. So in my case, in my cluster, I did not have any female leaders, for example, among the leadership group. And that was one great challenge that I promised myself to act on, and I said it's probably time. And I again was lucky that my managers were able to help me to move forward. So I think it's many different reasons. It also depends on the person. So what drives you? As long as a company we give the space for people to step out and try other things, it can be rotation between different teams and clusters. You get exposed to wider scope of business challenges, for example. I think that's probably.
I can relate to that. I mean, I think that as an EM, you also have the responsibility to, first of all, obviously know your people, right? And that comes from very simple things. It's like when you're interviewing and you ask those cliche questions that everybody gets asked, like give me an example of a project you worked on that you're particularly proud of. That everybody asks that question. It's not about the question, it's about how people respond. Mm. And depending on what they respond, you can tell this person is a good engineer. Right, it's not making this stuff up. You can just tell. It's kind of the same thing when you're working day to day. You will automatically or organically realize which of your individual contributors are more people driven. For example, some engineers just don't like to deal with people.
Yes.
The period, right? So and probably we've all seen how that works out when those people get into positions of leadership, which is usually bad, to put it politely. So putting them on the right path based on how motivated they are. Do they like to do interviews? Do they like to drive meetings? Do they like to whatever? So you get all those ingredients, right? And you can then shape their path accordingly.
Yeah, I think it's also specific for future leaders. It's I think twofold. One, talking about it and saying, okay, look, I'm interested in becoming a leader. And then from a manager or a leader point of view, identifying those things. And also a lot of times, I think you need to also see that, okay, yes, there will be somebody that need to take my place at some point in time, and identifying those people early as well, just so that you can grow them as well.
Yeah.
I think that's really important. And just an interesting thing about those interview questions. I mean, it's how they answer them, right?
100%.
If it's a situation of what's something you're particularly proud of, I did this, I did that, I did this, versus quickly finding out somebody's like being inclusive. Normally, those type of people are very indicative of team players and also leaders in that sense, because as a leader, you need to start realizing like, it's not about me, it's about the people around me. And I think what we do a lot, at least in our cluster, is we've seen people that we identify those types of traits in, and then we start giving them that responsibility in order to grow them. And I think that's something that at least our cluster is doing now, is instead of fulfilling need, we're growing people into or finding somebody that we're trying to fill people up from what we have and growing them in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's important to also give them that growth. Because, I mean, if you look at the tech industry now, a person has, what, a 2-year life at a company these days?
On average, yeah.
Yeah, on average. And, I mean, if you want to keep them, you need to grow them. And growing them from intermediate to senior to leaderships and either project or engineering leadership, I mean, those are ways where they feel they grow, and then they will stay.
And they have tremendous amount of things to give back, right? Because if they've been in the company, especially a company like Volvo, which requires a lot of time to properly get yourself onboarded onto, then they come with knowledge around the company, about the network in the company, its technical landscape, product vision, you know, business requirements and everything. So it's very hard it takes a lot of time to teach that to person who joins Volvo. When if you have potential inside, then you just grow that further, and it's most of the time quite rewarding. And I think as a company, I'm happy to also have found out very recently that we, for example, involve people in certain mentorship programs as well. I myself was informed by my manager a couple of days ago, where he said, I'm happy to announce that you've been chosen for a female mentorship program. And this apparently is, I've been here for like over 5 years. I didn't know much about the program myself, and that's probably just on me that I missed it. But this is a program for 15 mentees, and there is going to be 15 mentors, all female, very senior leaders in the company, not only in Sweden, but all around the world from Volvo, working in Volvo, but senior positions. What a great opportunity, though, like, because it gives you a lot of opportunity to build contacts and to build network and learn from their experiences. So I think as a company,
that's really awesome. I mean, I think we should talk more about that, because I think it naturally comes when you talk with some one-on-ones with some of the potential leaders who would like to be closer to people, is that they are really looking for these kind of opportunities within the company. And if you cannot provide that, maybe they'll find somewhere else to go. So I've personally been trying to connect people, potential people from my team, from my cluster, who are interested in this leadership roles, to connect them with someone whom they could talk to on a day-to-day basis. And it doesn't have to be me as a manager, but could be someone else. So I think this is really good that we are exploring those options. So, thanks.
Perfect. I think it follows in quite nicely to my last question today, which is, how do you create a healthy team culture?
A healthy team culture.
I think we alluded to that. I think we alluded to that quite a bit as well, where it's like you need to grow, you need to start by building trust, and then when they trust you, then you can kind of start steering the culture in a specific direction. because until that point in time, you're kind of going with the culture that there is, which might not be great at that point in time, or it might be wonderful. Well, I mean, it's mixed depending on where you end up. But until you get the trust of your people, you can't influence that culture.
Can't change things too quick. You also alluded to one thing, which is so leading by example, definitely. And that also means showing vulnerability first.
Yes.
Because you do it first. So that builds an environment where people say, okay, my manager is opening up. So that's great. That's great. Right? I can also, maybe and I'm not going to be as afraid. Yeah.
Vulnerability can also be admitting when you don't know something, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. That's huge, actually.
You just be direct with it. You say you don't know, but you also not only say, but also show that you are learning along the way, that you are every day, no matter what position you are in, wherever in the leadership position you're in, as long as you can showcase that you're learning. Give an example of anything that you've read lately which taught you a new thing. Just be concrete, like what is it that you learned from it, and how did you come across with that resource and everything. And because in my team, for example, I have people that are super smart, so I can't not use that. I have to learn from them. I have to learn from their past experiences. Being an engineer myself, and also having engineers who've specialized in different kinds of, for example, backend engineers, so like, you know, or front end, it doesn't matter. There is always things to learn from them. And then when, as a leader, you do learn from the team, they just follow your steps. They learn from each other. They learn also from you, and they trust you back with. And they come say, I don't know this. I need to spend some time on this. It also prepares a good foundation for the team to not be afraid to try and fail if necessarily. They need to fail. But then as long as they learn from that failure. So it's a healthy culture.
Trying things out.
A lot about a lot of different things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, fully agree. I think not fearing to fail is the key thing. And that's one pillar towards building trust. So we try a lot in our constellation as well, even though it's hard and everyone wants to run fast. We don't have time to do this. Let's move on. Let's focus on this, try to fix it, and then move on. So that's the kind of culture that we want.
It's important to challenge the team, right? It's like, we haven't tried this, and this might actually increase our productivity or our motivation. Mm-hmm. If it doesn't work, we go back to where we were and we shift gears, try something else. But at least we tried.
And we also have learned.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's the difference between saying, it's like going back to the interview environment. There's a difference between getting asked something you don't know and you just say, I don't know, or saying, I don't know, but I'd be happy to learn. Yeah. Just point me in the right direction.
But I also think it's also
an attitude.
Fostering that environment in the teams that failure is fine. Failure, just like anything else, is a tool. We take it, we try something, we learn, we move on, because we don't know what we don't know. So these explorations are always helpful, no matter what the outcome is. If it's a success, great. But if it's a failure, that's fine as well.
It's one step closer to success.
I mean, if you've got 10 doors, that's one door that's now definitely off the table. So
there we go.
Yeah, that's kind of all of the questions I have. Does anyone have any follow-up questions? Anything else that they'd like to talk about in this discussion?
Oh, but I think it was great. I think
we covered a lot.
Yeah, I think this has been a brilliant episode. I've learned so much. So thank you so much for your time. And it's really interesting to see how the team, that like, even though you're the same organization, you abide by the same culture and principles, how we have different top tips. It's been really, really interesting to hear. So thank you so much for all of your time.